Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we have a very interesting show dealing with what I would call the crux of what a lot of people think of as metaphysics and sometimes spiritual thought, although I don't think it's all that important in the scheme of things, but a lot of people like to know more about it, so we're going to talk about that. This is a show that really deals with science and metaphysics and spirituality and a number of other concepts and issues from time to time. Tonight, I thought we'd talk about metaphysical principles of reincarnation. Now, a lot of people say, oh, I don't believe in reincarnation. Why do we need it? My religion doesn't support it. Or maybe used to hundreds of thousands of years ago, but it doesn't do it anymore. And what's this all about? So we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about how come in metaphysical terms, not necessarily a specific religion, reincarnation makes a lot of sense. But in some religions, it started out being part of a religion and then was thrown out, so to speak, because in some cases it was politically undesirable. It has certain, we'll say, negative sides for those seeking to be in control of things, and we'll get to that too. But let me start off with what I mean by reincarnation. I mean, what is that? Well, a lot of people know what it is, or think they do, but reincarnation is the same soul creating a new type of personality, although with some characteristics from prior personalities incorporated, that incarnates in the physical world, is born into the physical world every so often. And we'll get into how often that might be and why it does all this. And so if we're talking about the same soul, then how come the soul itself isn't incarnating? I mean, come on. Why does it have to make a human being with a new personality that has to go through all the stuff we go through? And what happens to us after we die? And how come we, completely in our personal selves, don't come back as we were? Lot of interesting questions, right? And I intend on attempting to answer these. Well, first of all, let's start with the question of how come the soul just doesn't do all this stuff itself? Why the human being? Well, of course, I've answered this question in a number of different ways in different shows. They're all pretty much of the same basic idea, which is the soul is acting in the concert with its what it sees as the creator of the universe, and the creator of the universe gave all life free will and choice. And especially as life develops consciousness, it has greater and greater levels of such ability. As it is more able, it has greater freedom. That's all. It makes it for itself because it creates its own life. However, the interesting process in this situation is that the soul is kind of caught in a quagmire, and that is that if it could, it actually would come to the physical world and do its thing and go. But part of God's plan is to create new life more abundantly in lower dimensions of time and space that are more and more difficult to live in and that require, unfortunately, very gruff and difficult senses to survive, because otherwise the senses would be destroyed by the energy itself. But if you've got such tough senses, and toughness is a good way to explain it, the problem with tough senses is that they tend to not be very sensitive and not very accurate in their sensitiveness, especially when you reach the physical world, which is where we live, the physical universe itself. So in this dimension of time and space, you got to have senses that, you know, can handle this really, really relatively strong types of energy. And each sense deals primarily with a certain one of seven kinds of energies. And it in a sense, attracts a little bit of this energy to itself by being refined enough so that its own thinking, if you can imagine energy having any thought at all, is greater than the average energy around it, and so it attracts a little tiny fraction of that energy to itself, and we call that a sense. And that's true in physics and in biology and science, not just metaphysics. So in other words, if we were to understand how senses work on a physical, in a physical way, in a physical body, they're doing exactly what I just described. They're attracting other energy to themselves. And they do so, that's very subtle and that we don't understand, and that's the metaphysical part, where, because nobody can really understand why they do that or how they do it, and they do it because they actually have a very slight level of thought, which is greater than most other energy around them. Senses of any life that are not as refined as the energy that is around them, be it alive or not, become unable to adequately sense whatever it is that has greater refinement. So someone or something that has higher levels of energy that makes them up become, for all intents and purposes, invisible to most people because the energy that makes them up is not easily sensed. So they become like an invisible person. That's kind of an interesting idea, isn't it? And so this is how come, and when we get to the bottom line, the soul, with its extremely refined senses that function exceptionally well in the higher monastic or mental world, doesn't have really the kind of senses that could survive even living in the lower mental world, much less the astral and particularly the physical world. Those senses would just literally be destroyed. They would be overpowered by sense energy coming into them that would be extremely volatile, very, very, we'll say, non-conscious and very destructive to refined sense. So the soul says, oh, I can't go down there because, hey, I won't have any senses. I'll become as senseless or worse than the humans that I'm going to create. So it creates a human being, gives it a personality, and the personality, for those of you who have listened before, you have some idea of this. The personality is there to kind of control things, especially in younger life, and make sure that we survive. And it works under very fundamental and basic ways of thought. It takes the information from the senses, this is what the personality does, and subconscious to ourselves. We don't even know we're doing this because our personality is not conscious. It's not. We're not conscious to it, and it isn't really a conscious being. It works subconsciously to us. And so the amount of consciousness it has is very limited. And it takes in knowledge or information and creates knowledge. Well, what's the difference? Information doesn't tell us what something really is or why it is there. It just gives us, quote-unquote, something that we could parrot back. You know, like, I sense this, I sense that. But we wouldn't be able to definitively tell anybody, communicate to anybody, anything about what we're sensing, including to our self structure. And that's what makes us conscious, is that we have this information becoming knowledge, and then knowledge then turns into a form of consciousness. Because with the knowledge, we can then decide how we're going to use it. And the choice of how we use it and putting it together with other knowledge, ignoring some, etc., becomes the foundation of our level of consciousness. The soul has amazing consciousness, provided that what it's sensing is higher monastic energies that are so subtle we have no sense of them while we're physically alive, for the most part. Almost don't know. But that's all the soul does sense. And if it were to come here, those senses would be almost instantly destroyed, and the poor soul would be senseless. Not a good state to be in. And so it says, okay, going to make the personality. The personality is going to take charge of things while our self is very, very minimal. And we know what that's about because we can barely remember anything, much less do much, while we're in this lower level of self-development, which happens before age 7. And as you get younger, we're talking about much less self in the young child, toddler, eventually down to the infant. And so the personality is there to be the controlling factor, giving us a sense of security in that it's behind the scenes, so to speak. Personality is a combination of what the soul chooses to give us in our spiritual genes and who our parents might be to give us our physical genes. The combination of those gives us our kind of personality. And a lot of that personality needs to be helped by the better parts, if they are existent, of personalities from prior lives. This is the reason there is reincarnation, is it adds to the development of the personality and eventually somewhat to the self, but mostly the personality, and it helps people get a much better start throughout their childhood into adolescence and early adulthood. It is therefore a beneficial factor, if in the very basic sense, to reincarnate and get some of the old stuff that we had around that we used effectively in our genes, and then that improves our senses and it improves a lot of other things. So we get better energy, so to speak, that have to do with our personality, which, by the way, that does exist in the lower mental part of our bodies. And then we also get better senses in our astral and physical bodies. So this is all coming from the fact that the soul is looking for the better qualities we had while we were in various lifetimes. And it will take some of these qualities as it deems them working best together in us and with and for others. So it's a complicated thing, and souls actually spend quite a bit of their time and energy doing this very exercise in between lifetimes and while we're physically alive and astral alive. So it's an important part of their, we'll say, contribution. At the same time, the souls have to be concerned about what things we've done wrong. Because when we make mistakes, which is really caused by illusion and selfishness, those mistakes go on and have negative effects on not only us, in some circumstances, but on many others. And that's called karma. We put into action some causes that eventually will come back as effects on us. But maybe not for lifetimes and lifetimes. So the soul kind of catalogs these by their coming up time, when certain karma is going to reach us while we're physically incarnate in a certain lifetime. The soul recognizes this, and it can do a few things, actually, that might even delay some of the karma, although that could make it much worse, so it might not choose to do that, or accelerate it, which might make it a little better in some circumstances. But it also pays very close attention to what is, more or less, the coming state of our karma. So it can determine which genes, spiritual genes, it needs to use during the time that karma was created, so we can overcome the karma by improving those spiritual genes in this new life, rather than just leaving them exactly as they were and redundantly doing the same mistake again. Some people do that, no kidding. And they do it for several lifetimes, and they produce very toxic effects for themselves. But others actually gain a higher level of consciousness, are able to use the knowledge that even that defective personality parts still might be making in this new life that they're in, and change the outcome. So we could say that the karmic part, especially the negative karmic part, that a soul has to deal with, it does so to change the outcome and make it so that we're not going to have the same results. And if the outcome is changed, the personality becomes less controlling, the self grows immensely, and an even better thing than all of that happens, we become closer to God and develop a higher level of spiritual understanding or consciousness. And it's really a win-win kind of thing. There's no zero-sum kind of nonsense in this. It's really just either you choose to win or you don't. So the soul is looking for the right combination of putting really good genes, spiritual genes, in with some understanding that we are going to progress into various negative places throughout any particular lifetime. And sometimes it's going to be highly, aggressively negative. Sometimes it'll just be mild. Depends on the kind of karma we have created in the past. Now, reincarnation is a means to adjust this whole process. The speed at which someone reincarnates also affects how often they're going to be dealing with these karmic issues. And it has a pretty impactful issue on each person, whether or not they're going to have a lot of garbage take place in their lifetime, and when, or not. So we're facing these kinds of particularities that the soul is choosing for us through deciding just when we're going to incarnate, besides all the other things I mentioned, such as the spiritual genes, etc., and who and where we're going to do that incarnating about. So it's a big factor. Reincarnation is really a fascinating and difficult, complex formula to determine what's best for not just the individual person, but all those that they will interact with throughout a whole lifetime. It's an amazingly complicated scenario. Souls obviously have to be brilliant in their thinking to even get close to operating in this particular way. And they do. Okay, so reincarnation is ultimately a means of being of service to all of humanity by helping each personality to do its best. And if there wasn't reincarnation, we would only have one shot at it. And let me tell you, life is so hard in the physical world, not as hard, but still difficult in the astral world, that there would be just unmitigated failure through the entire realm of lives if there was not this forgiving, graceful system of reincarnation that permits us to grow slowly and to try out new things. And it gives us opportunities that we would never have had otherwise. So it's a good system. It's not some kind of bogus nonsense. It doesn't mean anything. Just the opposite. It is a wonderful but complicated system. And we need to be, we'll say, at least willing to be open-minded about its existence, because some people say, oh, well, I'm just going to heaven or hell. Hopefully heaven after this life, and then I just hang around God. Or maybe sit on a cloud, or maybe, who knows, but I don't have to be here anymore. Well, that would be a nice fantasy, but it isn't real, because it doesn't even make sense. I mean, if we're here to create light in this world, the amount of light that most people create in each lifetime is so minimal that it's a rare person that even makes a significant change in either themselves or others for some improvement towards our Creator. That's rarity. Most people, they're just like bumps in the road, and they do very little in a specific physical life. Some are exceptional, I agree. but most are not. This is the difficulty here in this world. There are other worlds where it isn't so negative. But here it is. Okay, so we can. We can actually move ahead. We can increase our consciousness. And our soul can choose the appropriate time for us to reincarnate. Strangely, in some religions, such as Buddhism, especially Tibetan Buddhism, it's believed that people reincarnate somewhat based upon how they have lived the last few years, weeks, months of their life, and how they even die, and how they get themselves together in the astral world and that. So there's a lot of factors that involve reincarnation within that particular religion. I don't think they have as clear an understanding as the one that I have explained so far, but they at least have some concerns and thoughts about it. Other religions don't. Why not? Well, if you don't want to accept reincarnation, then it makes people much less responsible for their actions and what happens to them. And it takes away some of the cause and effect issues in people's lives. That may seem like a good thing, but it doesn't get you closer to God. It gets you much further away from God if you take it to its logical conclusion. And unfortunately, that's the negative side of rejecting reincarnation. Not to say that all things that are thought or taught about it are accurate. But nonetheless, the basics are there, and that's the critical factor. All right, so then where does this leave us? I mean, souls are doing this wonderful creating of human beings based upon these karmic issues, and then they have to decide when we're going to reincarnate, and that's based upon how many associates, people that we've known before, had some relationship with in some one or more of the planes, and that we can be of some service to them about, that will determine many times when we're going to reincarnate. And so, if we took it in terms of years and numbers, it ranges. It can range to be as short as literally a few years, that's pretty strange and not common, to a few decades, which is almost equally as strange and not common, to many decades, leading to 100 years, and eventually for some people, to way over 100 years, but probably less these days than a couple hundred for most people. So reincarnation has really many different sides to it based upon just the factor of when you're going to reincarnate and how is that going to be manifested in terms of a person. We usually don't consider these things, but souls do, and they need to in order to make sure or to ensure that we have a productive life, one that creates more light than not. And it's basically a more virtuous life than that. When a life becomes more than 50% virtuous, we start having memories about the life that we were virtuous in to that level. At 60%, we can remember anything as long as we remember 60% of what took place. So our memory becomes very keen if we have 60% consciousness about some prior life. Those are kind of rare people that have that, though. Most people have limited, almost no understanding, and they may have remembered a prior life before they were 7 years old, because it's much easier to do that. But after that, it may have eluded them. They may even today, even if they were young a long time ago, consider that maybe they were wrong, they weren't thinking clearly, it was just a child's fantasies, when they really did have a number of memories from a prior life, but they repressed them. Not uncommon. There's no reinforcement with children, usually, to expound on their prior physical existence, even if they're sure they know it. And a lot of kids, maybe as much as half, before the age of 5 or 6, have quite a few memories about a prior life, usually the last one they were in. You'd be surprised, just ask them. If you don't ask them, I don't think they'll talk about it. because of the nature of our system. But if you do ask, you may get some pretty amazing answers. Okay, so let's look more into the depths of reincarnation. Since it benefits us to reincarnate because we're growing faster by doing that, how does it hurt us then? Well, some people get caught in an endless cycle of repeating a negative lifetime. Souls will try to change the sex of the person when that happens. They'll also change many circumstances in which the person will be reborn and give it a distinctly different personality. But that doesn't mean it's a completely different person. They may have a lot of traits in common with their old personality. So it's never a mathematical kind of computation. There's a lot of flying by the seat of your pants experience in helping to create a new human being. Nonetheless, in the long run, looking at how the system turns out, many, many people are born with the ability to both remember their past life and to do something about it. That's probably the bigger issue. If you have kids, and some of you do out there, that are younger, ask them about this. See if you can draw it from them. Sometimes they're afraid to talk about it. Not every kid will remember anything, but some will. When kids remember a past life, it's worthwhile to talk to them about it. They may have gained some real residual understanding about what that life was about, and it may help them in this one. There's nothing wrong with that. Now, you may have certain belief structures that prevent you from doing that, or maybe the church you belong to would not be interested in hearing about that. You go to a different church, or you could just not tell them what you're doing. But the point is that this allows children to express themselves, and it allows the adults around them that love them to try to build a closer relationship. And this kind of thing is so common in children, yet it's so hidden, it's worthwhile to allow them to talk about it and bring it up. Not to plant ideas in their mind, just allow them to say what they already have in their thoughts. Okay, so then who determines exactly when we're going to reincarnate? Well, I said the soul, but that isn't exactly true. It's actually us. In our prior life, while we were in the lower mental world, if we awoken, and a lot of people do, but not all, and were able to have contact with other people in the mental world that are much closer to their souls than when they were physically alive, we start doing the same thing our soul is doing, planning for the future. We actually have communication over time with our souls from the lower to the higher and back again mental plane. You got to be living in the mental world, obviously. That means you've already lived a life here and in the astral world before you got there. Now, there's a tremendous advantage to this because you're making input into your own next life, and you may have a different sense of that next life when you're reincarnated because you feel as though you helped to create it. You may not know about reincarnation. You may not understand anything about the mental world, but you just have this innate feeling like, this is the life I created somehow, and I'm involved in. Those kinds of people are fortunate because their self-structure grows very rapidly from early childhood. And the reason for that is they have this innate sense that they are the controlling, on a conscious level, being, not this subconscious part of them that they don't even understand or hear about. So it kind of buffers the self-structure from the personality. It prevents the development of personality disorder. And it allows a person to become usually much more effective in their service at a much earlier age. It's really a good thing. Not everybody does it, but those that do and can benefit quite a bit from it. Okay, so if we are actually, some of us, are actually going to be involved in this process, is it worthwhile to think about it while we're physically alone? Boy, is it ever. I'll tell you why. Yes, it's true. We may not be conscious enough to truly understand what is happening to us moment to moment in this physical world. But just the idea that we are trying makes some difference in our consciousness. And if you go beyond just trying, where you really are deeply concerned about how your next life is going to be and what you can do in this life, since you're still physically alive, to improve upon that, that is a big leap forward. And it's no small leap. Could save a couple lifetimes or more. That's a big deal in terms of time. It also could allow us to develop more meaningful relationships with so many other people, because we could encourage them to finish that process while we're doing the same, and we work on these things together in a mutual fashion. This is way better than the very separative way most people live. So this is a good thing, and we have that opportunity. Now, if we don't get there in the physical world because we're too illusioned, we'll have another crack at it in the astral world, and if that doesn't work out so well for us, the lower mental world is the place where vast majority of numbers of people are able to do some co-planning and to be far more conscious than when they were physically alive. So it's a good thing. And if you think about it, wow, those who are really starting in physical world life to do this are so much further ahead. When they do go on to the astral lower mental world, they'll become leaders. They'll become small or mini teachers. They'll be able to confer a lot of who they are into serving others while they're physically alive, because they're kind of correcting themselves, and as they do that, they can help others to do the same. This is one heck of a system. So thinking that reincarnation is kind of superfluous and doesn't really make any difference, as you can see, I'm not selling that baloney. No, I'm saying that it makes a huge difference, and there's a tremendous advantage to this whole process. What about the familiarity with people that we have been in relationships before? Many people are fascinated by that idea. Oh, my mother used to be my brother used to be my wife, my uncle used to be my school teacher, there's all this stuff. Is it all true? And if so, how do we ever find that out? And does it matter? Well, it matters to the personality, because the personality is attracted to these other people. So early in life, we start bonding with people that we have had some interactions with, either while we were in the physical world before, or while we were living astrally, or in the lower mental world. So we have a lot of different opportunities to meet a lot of different people. If we form a bond, and within that bond there is virtue, it'll really last for us. If the bond is about being enemies and destruction, that bond may not last so long. There may be karma to pay for anything we do that's really hostile in that negative bonding, but the person themselves may not become a close enough figure to us to make much difference in our life. It all depends. But nonetheless, this is how it generally works. So, if we're going to consider things like who and why are we going to be with, and etc., familiarity is a factor, especially if it's been for several lifetimes that we've carried this familiarity out. And if we have yet to resolve certain things karmically that we did or didn't do while in the company of these other people, then they're probably going to be back. Now, they may not be back at all in the same ways that they were before. The idea that someone comes back over and over again is apparent, not really true. There are occasions when it happens, but most of the time it doesn't. So, looking at it from that standpoint, each life has a uniqueness to it. It isn't just a rerun of a prior life or some future time when we're going to just be doing similar stuff all over again. It's highly unique. Every life is very self-created and very different. The other people around us are different. We are different. The times are different. The world has changed. Maybe we're even on a different planet. That's a whole other show, I guess. But it can happen to a few people. So this is really the foundation of reincarnation, is that it gives us so many pluses with not very many minuses, and it allows a lot more for us to grow and change within a shorter period of time, which really is needed if we're going to get anywhere in this, we'll say, bottom-leveled place that we end up in. Physical life is the most difficult life on average for everybody. It's a tough place. Reincarnation gives us a lot of advantages in dealing with that very tough place. Do people have to reincarnate? What happens if someone says, hey, you know what, I'd rather just go to the astral world. I don't want to be born in a physical world. I really hated it last time, and it sucks, and all this inertia and terrible energies. How about if I just go to the astral world? Well, doesn't work that way. In order to be incarnated at all, you must be born into the physical world. There are no actual births of people in the astral world. If you remember some of the shows I've done on this, people sometimes get confused by that. They even make movies that are confused by that. But you can only incarnate into the physical world and then move on into the astral and lower monastic worlds and have lifetimes there. The reason you can't incarnate into the astral world is because the personality, it requires that it have three parts to itself, and those three parts correspond to the three planes of brain and three planes of body that are so necessary to make up the form part of a person while they are under the guise of a personality. So it's impossible. It's not just something difficult to do. You can't be born into the astral world as your first destination. Just as you can't escape it as your second. When we die from the physical world, we can't just jump into the monastic world and say, oh, I don't think astral life's all that cool for me. I think I'll just go into mental life, or, you know, so like shopping or something. No, you can't do that, though. It's not possible. The physics don't support it. It's a little complicated. But there's the next body in line where our consciousness is focused from the physical becomes the astral. I know there's a brief time where we're kind of stuck in the etheric body, but that's only a small thing, and it's still part of the physical world. At any rate, eventually we have the opportunity, if we really, really want to, even using what might be considered the not the best motives or rationale. The problem we're facing whenever we are trying to move on to another dimension is we're stuck with the astral brain that we were using while we were physically alive and the monastic brain. We take them with us. They don't get supplanted with new stuff. So you see, the whole system is kind of made as an integral unit. We are made as one person, and we have to live within that confine. I want you to think about that. We're going to be back here in about 2.5 minutes, and we'll go over some more of the interactions and interesting elements of principles of reincarnation. See you in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlouer.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Just talking to Seth, our engineer, and he wanted to know what kind of things we're doing in case there's a radiation disaster, and he wanted some information. We have that available. For some, if you want to email us, we can send you what we have. Now, we being a spiritual group I'm a member of, yeah, we've got radiation gear and all kinds of other stuff. That's not to say that we're hoping to see any of that get used. But it's worthwhile. Now, everybody's got the potassium iodide pills. Really, don't take those unless there's a big exposure and you really have to because they have a lot of negative effects. And they're really best for your kids rather than yourself if you're an adult. The better thing is to have, believe it or not, certain kinds of rain gear if you're just dealing with alpha and beta fallout. That's a certain type of radiation. Gamma radiation, you'd have to have a lead-lined suit. It's not going to be very practical. But, you know, it's like things faster than even X-rays. They have tremendous energy, and they come out of neutrons. And they're very, very dangerous, actually. But you'd have to be pretty close to a blast to get much of that kind of radiation. And the other kinds can be tracked. We've got a little, big Geiger counter. It's really not mine, per se, but it's a unit that others use, and it's kind of cute, and it's easy to carry, and it keeps track of how much exposure a person has in a numerical way, it's worthwhile having one of those too, I guess. As I was saying to Seth, the thing that I'm more disturbed about isn't so much these natural disasters. They're bad, they're terrible. Tens of thousands to 100,000s of people are dying. That's never a good thing, but probably the worst thing would be a terrorist attack on a nuclear plant. That would be much more dangerous, and there's ways that could become a terrible thing. So I don't want to really announce it over the radio because I don't want to give anybody any ideas. And we don't live very far from one of those plants, about 50, 60 miles, and a lot of people don't. And, that could be much more dangerous because then you're deliberately tampering or trying to destroy the confinement vessel and other things. So if you're concerned about that, you can send us an email, call us, whatever. And we'll share with you what we have done. We've done a lot more than that in terms of overall concepts of survival. It's best to have a few months of food around, as I've said before, at least that much water, and maybe a lot of potable water that you can collect. It may not be drinkable, but you know, if you could collect it in a swimming pool or, it doesn't have to be one of the big swimming pools like in the ground kind, just some kind of, like a kid's swimming pool or something, that might be helpful under some circumstances. Also having the ability to still have some form of power, self-defense, just all kinds of stuff, and be able to deal with germs and It isn't just radiation, let's face it. There's all kinds of things we have to worry about. Whether these things are going to actually manifest and become part of our future, that's to be seen. I'd rather have something than not. Even it may have cost me a few pennies to get it or dollars, because if you don't have it, it's too late to get it once things get bad. We'll find them, and it'll be almost impossible to get anything. Okay, so enough of that subject. I know it's a kind of grotesque and negative to think about, but after all, look what we're facing from just a natural disaster. I mean, you know, and you have to ask yourself, if we geologists have known for about 20 to 25 years, that every so often Japan has a 9.0 earthquake, just the way the northwestern part of the United States does. As a matter of fact, it goes back and forth. It's kind of connected between Japan and that area. I don't know why they didn't build the plants to 9.0. I mean, honestly, because that's what has been determined. They actually had that number. Scary. 8.2, when you know a 9.0 is coming, is probably not the best planning in the world. But that's how reincarnation, I'm going to get back into tonight's show, really helps us, because it helps to improve our consciousness. And after all, if we don't improve our consciousness from one life to another, we're probably doomed to extinction, because the world is not coming to become a safer and, you know, more hospitable place. It's got a lot of problems. Now, I would have wanted to be born or lived in the Dark Ages, may have done so, but it was probably a much more ruthless and difficult time to survive in. However, you didn't have to have very high consciousness to figure out ways to do that. Today, you got to really be conscious if you're going to stay alive in a world as we live today. And there's a lot of things that can come and bite you. Okay, so reincarnation does help us progress, to raise our consciousness, and that's what our souls are looking for. They're just saying, hey, anything that can do this, we're in for it. We're good for it. So, if we are examining the rationale of reincarnation or not reincarnation, it just doesn't make sense to not have reincarnation. I know people say, well, it makes sense that we don't, because then you only live one life and it's kind of cool, and you go off and you sit on whatever and there's all these angels and everything. But that isn't really what happens. I know some people want to believe that, but you might want to read some of this material, the hundreds of articles, I finally have gone past the number of articles I've written. I've written like 350 articles. We've got more than that in radio shows. So listen to those. And I think you'll get an idea of what the afterlife is like. And the afterlife is not really just, you know, fun and games. It's not all like going to heaven. And it isn't exactly like going to hell either, if you've really had a lousy physical life that you've lived. But it is something different than that. It deals with another element and part of being alive and being human. And it gives us a chance to find grace and salvation beyond the physical life. And at the same time, it gives us the opportunity to develop a higher level of consciousness. But unfortunately, our creativity is lessened, because there is a whole body and sense and a physical realm that's gone. And that's where you can be most creative, if not find it most difficult to do so. Well, okay. Not everything comes easy, but that's the way it is. So in examining it from that standpoint, that makes more sense, too, than sitting around, you know, kind of on a cloud, kind of bored to death, trying to figure out, you know, what eternity is going to be like doing that. I don't know. Certainly not my cup of tea in terms of heaven, but maybe some people it is. And interestingly, a few people go into the astral world and try to create that kind of life for themselves, usually with a lot of grief and unhappiness as a result, because they just don't get it. I mean, usually once people get to the astral world, they begin to adapt to the fact that it isn't exactly what they expected. It's not terrible, but it's not what they expected. But nonetheless, you know, hey, that's the way it is. And again, if you've listened to the shows here and you read some of the stuff I've been, you'll come to a better understanding, and the illusions of that system of thought will not tie you down and create a problem for you. All right, so therefore, people who do read a lot of metaphysical things, as well as think in terms of physics and science, come to the conclusion that reincarnation, oftentimes do, come to the conclusion that reincarnation makes sense, because they begin to understand its greater benefits and not some of the silly, reductional thoughts that people have about it, which are usually based upon nonsense, because they just don't understand how it works or why it works. All right, so let's say in a practical side, you're listening to the show, which you are, and you come to the conclusion, okay, well, I want to make this life the best I can, and when I reincarnate in my physical life, then next time around, knowing that I'm going to first go and live in an astral life and then a lower mental life, and join with my soul for a while too, when I do all that, I want to do it in a way in which I preserve some memory, have a greater sense of myself, and will be born with much higher levels of consciousness with better senses that make better knowledge as well. To make my next life better life while I'm physically alive. What is the recipe for doing that? Because, you know, now you've told us that there is reincarnation. I'll buy into that. But what's the recipe for actually doing it? And let me give you some ideas. One of the things that I suggest to a lot of people is that they become more focused out. Now, what is that? That means stop focusing everything in your life about yourself. Don't relate to other people as being about what you are or are not being, doing, saying, etc. Relate to them in terms of what they would like to know, what they feel is important, what would be helpful for them in their service to others, and would help them to grow as a soul rather than a personality. It may not be what they absolutely want at the present time. They may desire something different than that. But give them what you think is best and helpful for them up to the point where they will accept what you give them. If they don't, you say, okay, you know what, you're not going to accept it. I'll move on. I won't say anymore. I won't do anymore. You go ahead and do your thing. But if they're willing to accept it, then be particularly concerned about making sure that what you offer and what you give is not personal and is really helpful. It gives them that opportunity. When you do that, you grow as much yourself as anyone that you give to on an average. That's why I'm suggesting that you try this, because it's so important. Now, the odd thing about it is there's kind of a catch-22, and let me explain that. If you do it for the purpose of living a better life now and in the future, in your next incarnation, etc., it won't work because it's wrong motive. You're doing it because you're thinking of yourself. It's only as you become forgetful of that reason, and you will, by the way, by continually focusing on others and helping them and wanting to co-serve with them. That really is what breaks the spell and gets a person out of that paradoxical thought that they really want to be a better person. And that's where their focus is, which is very selfish, of course. I find this whole thing intriguing because so many people, when you tell them about this, tend to reject that solution. They say, oh, I don't want to do that. What else can I do? Oh, okay. All right. And then they adopt the wrong motive idea, you know. Well, what's wrong with me just wanting to be the best person I can be, but the reason I want to do it is for me. Okay. The problem with that is that the contradiction in terms limits your ability to do it. And the more that you want to do it for that reason, the less you achieve in actually getting to that goal. Very, very strange, isn't it? So that's one of the things to watch out for, that kind of paradoxical problem that oftentimes sneaks up on people. All right, so what else can you do? What else is there to improve your next life? Well, try to examine your relationships with those people that you know fairly well. This is oftentimes a secret about about what your last life or lives are about, and see how you can remedy them and yourself at the same time. Not necessarily just focusing out, but also recognizing that with some people, there's very special conditions that are taking place, and that if you can really get into the depths of those issues, you are actually starting to deal with your past lives and the karma that may be coming from them and many other issues. You also start breaking through the personality problems that you and the others have because you did have past lives together. And you were maybe not focusing out as much as you could or should have, and the results were not always positive and productive. This is a fantastic idea, really. And I know that a lot of people may doubt what I'm saying, but you need to try this before you doubt it, because I believe it's very effective. It tells you so much about who you are as a soul in relationship to these other souls as you see them functioning, maybe very selfishly as persons, and how you have been functioning very selfishly as persons, as a person, and the results are amazing. You can basically start seeing through time and space back to maybe the last 3, 4, 5, 10 lifetimes and gain a tremendous understanding that you didn't have before. And nobody can really do this for you. You've got to really do it for yourself. And I know, I even did some workshops a long time ago on this very subject and tried to help people to do it. But it was still them doing it for themselves and to themselves. It wasn't so much like I was sitting there saying, well, this is the way your last life was. Let me give you all the information. I'm not talking about that, because that really may be fraught with all of the person that is giving it to you, their illusions, even if they're the best psychic in the world. And it may also never get to what you're really looking for, just to the superficial things, which really don't do much. So I don't recommend that you seek out the advice and counsel of people who claim they can do this for you. You need to do it for yourself, and you need to pay attention of how and why you will move in that direction to be the kind of person that you really want to be, and recognize the mistakes and the problems that you function under in illusion in this life that may be still connected to what you have done in the last few lives, and how the people around you are really integrated and a part of all of that. Fascinating stuff. It really is. So that to me is one of the most helpful things. I wouldn't call it like a trick or some kind of, you know, quick fix. It's more like, it's almost a process of living, but it's a really good one. Also, once you do what I just suggested, you can go to the next step. And I'm looking at the time here. Yeah, I guess I'm going to go into this. Then I'll give you a break from my jabbering. The next step would be to then really start acting like your soul is doing, and see if you can be aware of and in touch with your soul to start planning out your next physical life while you continue to improve this one. Because certain opportunities have left you. Depending upon your age, by the time you're 49 years old, you pretty much have solidified your life to a very strong extent. That doesn't mean you can't change things, but it's going to be difficult to completely restructure what you've already created for yourself. And that may have to wait for your next physical life, and you may have to plan some of it while in the mental world, but you can start now. It's possible, and that's always an improvement. You could also make the most out of the remaining life you have while you're physically alive here by doing the same thing. But sometimes you can't touch or change the things that you needed to be much younger to have developed. For a lot of people, they just can't go back to school and go get a different degree, as an example. Or they can't marry a different person. Or they can't decide differently how many children they will or won't have. There's things that just pass us by at a certain age, and there's no way in this life that we can go on and do something about those things. Or if we did, we might ignore our responsibilities in so many other ways. It would be foolhardy and even destructive to ourselves and others to do it. A lot of things we can do. A lot of things we can change. I don't want to be a naysayer here. But those things are not things usually related to the bigger factors that I'm suggesting. They oftentimes have to do with still being a creative being. We can make a change anytime if we're going to create something that really lies outside of the most basic parts of ourselves. It's the basic things that are hard to start changing, especially after 35 and 42 years of age, and almost impossible by 49. Now, if you aren't yet 42, you got a decent chance. If you're not 35, you certainly have a good chance of making even radical changes, if that seems to be the direction that would be best for you, to make yourself into a more co-creative being with your creator. And it's good if you're that young, especially if you're that young and listening to this show, because it shows that you have these opportunities still ahead of you before you have to really consider your next life. If you're older than that, or if you see imminent death for some reason or another, then it's best to start doing everything you can in this life and start planning your next, because that's how you do it. Remember, you don't plan just your next life in the astral world. That's a totally different ballpark. We'll talk about that in the next part of the show. But you need to plan the next physical life as well. And maybe even more importantly, because the astral world, you're going to be there for a long time. Because of time dilation, you're going to be there for what you'll perceive to be and will feel like hundreds of years. It just won't be the same years we have here. But it will be real to you. And that's going to be a much longer life, so you have more of an opportunity to make changes, but you can't change the physical self, you can't change the physical world, or anything physical, because there's no more physical energy and no more physical body or senses either. So that's a thing to be obviously considering and thinking about. Okay, let me give you a little bit of a rest here and just talk about a couple of things. If you have the time on this coming Monday, Mimi is teaching a class over at Barnes & Noble. She usually has taught at Borders, but some of the Borders stores have been closing because they got themselves into some financial trouble. And so Barnes & Noble is now going to be where she's going to be teaching at from 7 to 8:30, a little bit longer time, at McClintock and Loop 202 at the Tempe Marketplace. It's a real nice shopping center, by the way. And it's open to the public. There's no charge. This month, she's talking about creating spiritual beauty. And that's Monday, March 21st from 7 to 8:30 p.m. And if you're interested, just drop in. There's a group of people that have been meeting and listening to her teach, as well as asking questions. And some of them are doing some service-related things at this point and doing a lot of other stuff. So if you have the opportunity, stop on by. Why not? And let me also mention that if you happen to be in Phoenix or living in Phoenix, you can go over on Saturdays. And, gee, you know what? I don't know if I think I have forgotten the name of the store. There's a store that we have been offering Phi Chi Jizik and other products at. They're selling our products in the store. And they're actually the largest store. I think it's called Living Oh, well, it might pop in my head. I was there for a visit the other day, and I should be on the radio with them soon, actually. I'm going to do a little hour show with from that store on a different station. And they are promoting our products because they think they really work. And if you want to stop by, someone from the spiritual group I'm a member of might be there to talk to you about some of the things that we have to offer that are really of benefit. Tai Chi Jisik is one of them, but there's many other kinds of things. And so it may give you an opportunity to even look at and handle a bottle. You know, sometimes people prefer that. And I like stores that do that. You know, and this store has wonderful place. It's a little, I mean, they got everything there. It's just wall to wall, everything you might want to try. And they also have an area where they have workshops and other parts. So I just thought I'd mention that. Also, I guess I'll tell you a little bit more that Tai Chi Jisik is, at this point, it's a really smashing success. Far more people are finding it greatly helpful than are not, which is always a good thing. And some people don't find it helpful, which I feel that is going to happen. But most people, I would say it's way over 9 out of 10, find it to be really of benefit, and they're using it for a lot of different pains. And that's what it's for. It's an analgesic. But it's a different kind of analgesic because it doesn't put the devonic energies that signal pain in our nervous, well, in our native system, which corresponds to the nervous system, in the electromagnetic or etheric part of us. Instead of shutting those down, which is what narcotics do, this product opens them up. And it helps to let the chi energy move around more easily and produce really positive effects in people, reducing the overall sense of pain that they have caused by retained energy in the center, or in some cases, not enough energy. It's a great product, really fantastic. And it's so, you can make it as strong or as weak as you need because you can take more or less as you choose to. So I would really suggest you give it a try. Someone just gave me the name of that store. It's Healthy Habits Health Foods. It's over on 7th Avenue and Bethany Home Road if you are in the Phoenix area. You can go visit there. Healthy Habits Health Foods. A lot of H's. Healthy Habits Health Foods. Go and give it a shot and take a look at all the stuff, all the products that they are presently selling. Okay, back to reincarnation and what we can do to improve our, we'll say, next life in the physical world and also our afterlife. Now, why would we be concerned about our afterlife? Well, there's a rationale. The astral body that we're going to use next time will be the result of how we live this time, after our physical life is over, in the astral world. Just as the monastic or mental body we're going to have next time will be significantly related to how we live this time in the lower mental world once we leave the astral world. That's just plain and simple, the easiest way to understand it. So how we live in those worlds is somewhat dependent, first of all, on how we did live in the physical world, and then how we have contemplated, thought about, and used our emotional selves as either being loving or emotionally selfish and self-focused. So that has a huge effect on things. So it's worthwhile to try to change what astral issues we have now while we're physically alive. So when we get to the astral world, we're way ahead of the game. And we're not going to be, as many people are, totally swamped and overpowered by our glamours. Those are like fixed desires inside of us. And spend countless decades, even hundreds of years, with these nonsense glamours that really destroy our astral bodies and eventually our astral life, and doom us to have an insufficient emotional side in our next physical life, because the astral body is still part of us in that life, and the one we get is going to be the result of how we live. So how you live is how you will be reborn, and how the soul will be, to some extent, choosing to recreate you. You're not going to be reborn with exactly the same personality, but some of the karmic issues are going to be there staring you right in the face. And if you don't decide to change now, you may be dealing with those far more than you would want to. So that's a good reason. Also, when I mentioned about those people that we have as friends, relatives, lovers, hopefully not too many, but enemies as well, in this world, in the physical world, can move on to become part of our reality in the astral world, although they usually don't with enemies too much, because usually one of the enemies has higher consciousness than the other, and they may not be in the same sub-world of the astral world together. Unlike the physical world, we're all kind of pushed together like sardines and crunched because of the gravitational issues and other things of this world. The astral world has definitively different regions that people live in, and people with lower consciousness cannot reach the regions of higher consciousness, so kind of like they're isolated. It's a good thing and a good reason for it, because your abilities become much greater to do good or harm to others by just how you feel and using your thought, astral thought, which is creative imagination, to create things. That's dangerous for people who have low enough consciousness, because they may act on it in very repulsive and negative ways, and they should be around other people of equal consciousness, not around people who have much higher consciousness, because there they can be much more disruptive than while they were physically alive. The physics changing makes a huge difference in the way that people live. The science involved in it is really straight out of quantum physics. It has to do with a change in a thing called the quantum constant, which means, in basic terms, how much is energy affected by thought, astral thought, which is creative imagination, and how much is it connected by how much we're directing that thought, because you can direct thought much better in the astral world, because direction of thought is a dimension itself. Here it is not a dimension. And so energy moves always in some direction because of this in the astral world. It doesn't here. Here it randomly flies around when we think of the world being in chaos. Not so much in the astral world, because it moves in a direction almost always. Therefore, this is something that we want to take care about, that we don't want to end up in a place where people are constantly playing with us and maybe doing terrible things to us. And maybe because of the capabilities they gain by being in that environment, that's what they exactly wanted, that's their desire, and that's a bad thing, because they're controlled by those desires. You don't want to be one of those people either, because they produce a lot of negative karma for themselves, which comes back in turn negative terms in their ability to create a normal astral body in their next lifetime, the soul to create this, and they have a lot of negative astral karma to deal with in their next lifetime. So those are not really things that most people want, and we're in control of these elements if we are aware of and conscious of them. Hopefully what I'm helping in this show is for people to be able to do that. Awareness and consciousness are big factors in making your life into something that is an improvement. Remember, we're here to make ourselves, but mostly others, better, and to do so within the light of God, not within our own selfish motives. All right, so it's incumbent on us to try to become aware of this before we go to the astral world, so we can improve our astral structure and emotions and become more loving and more helpful to others. Help them to do the same. Not coddle them or give them just what they feel like they want, but give them what they need and be of assistance in helping them to serve. Tough love is sometimes the only way you can do that with some people, but the most important thing is that you do it in ways that are consistent, that help in the majority of cases to be somewhat enlightening to both yourself and others, and it allows people to hopefully find what you're finding, which is that you're making your next life as you live this one, both in terms of the afterlife and in terms of the next physical life at the same time. It gives you a tremendous sense of empowerment. It's almost like magic when people start seeing these principles of reincarnation and employing them in their lives. It frees you. That's all I can describe it as, freedom to be who and what you want to be in this life and in the future. And you start thinking about and being a soul. You start feeling like a soul. What a wonderful thing to feel like a soul. It gives you the sense that no one can make you into anything other than who you're creating. And you're co-creating that with God, so you like what you see as you develop what you are. And you're helping other people to do the same. It's a wonderful life if you do it that way. Now, some people will say, well, what about my religion? Doesn't believe in reincarnation. Or what about all these other people I talk to? They say, well, this is it. There's no life after death. You just become a bunch of disorganized chemicals and things, and you're gone. Well, if you want to believe that stuff, I feel very sorry for you. Because all of the great things about us becoming something are about us being self-created beings that can choose to co-create with our Creator and become more and more aware of what that is and what that means and help others to do the same. If you think the other way, you're most likely not going to do those things. You're not going to experience the joys of living, and your life may become terrible. Now, a lot of people say, well, you call it terrible, I call it being realistic. Well, that's a funny word sometimes. Realism, or the real from the unreal, is what the soul does. And what the personality does is it covers up the real, and it only lives in the unreal. And it suffers immensely. It continuously has a saddened, very depressive, negative existence because it isn't living in the tremendous beneficial ways that are available to it. But this is common, unfortunately. Not hopefully that common, but it's pretty common. And too many people do not believe in reincarnation. They don't believe in anything, and they seek only the elements of material existence. What a shame. Why not try for like a month this other way if you haven't been doing it? Why not say, okay, I don't know if reincarnation is real or not. Maybe I'll read this guy's book. He has a chapter on it. I don't know. I'll listen to some of his shows. And then next month, I'll just try to live my life as though it is real. You don't have to be completely convinced and then see how that changes your life. Then you might say, whoa, you know what? If it's that powerful that I can change how I feel and what my life is really like just by thinking about things as though it is real, what happens when I'm convinced it's real? Yeah. Talk about a life-changing event. There's a big deal, huh? So you can see how this is really a bigger subject than maybe it sounds like on the surface of things. Although the interesting thing is when I started the show, I said it isn't as important as maybe a lot of people think. And let me go into that side of it. The important element of reincarnation is empowering us to change now it isn't about really worrying about what our last life was like or what our next life is going to be like. That in itself is part of the illusionary system that we're trying to open ourselves up from and wake up from. Why? Because when we've spent a lot of time just fantasizing or going to other people who help us to do so about what our last life was like without it being part of changing who we are in this life and making ourselves better and helping other people to do that, then we are literally just engrossed in fantasies about ourselves and are being selfish. So that part of reincarnation really has a very negative side to us. And when people get into that vein, similar to what I said about this earlier in the show, but in a little bit different perspective, they many times become almost, we'll say, like metaphysical junkies. They're looking for the quick fix metaphysics that'll make them suddenly become much grander and more important. So they want to know about their last life because they think it's going to make them be more important because they did something great in their last life. Well, most people didn't do great things in their last life because they're not doing great things in this life. The people who did do great things in their last life usually are doing great things in this life. I know that's hard to believe, but it makes every bit of sense. I hate to break the bubbles, I know. How many people have been great figures in history? And the same ones, by the way. Millions of times over again because they believe in reincarnation. How many Cleopatras? How many other great legendary people? Caesar. Who knows? But the point is that it doesn't mean anything. It's who you are today and who you're becoming and growing into and helping others to do that and how you plan your next life. That's really more important. Who you were, if you were someone great, would be of little consequence to you if you're living some greatness yourself now. You just say, well, it's just a continuation. I did some of that stuff before. I made a few mistakes. I did a lot of mistakes, whatever. And now I'm this new person who has taken the benefits of that prior life, which is not, it's not good to deny him. But at the same time, you don't want to, oh, I'm the other person, and I'm just going to be that person. What good would that do? You already did it. Been there, done that, you know? You don't want to recreate those mistakes either. Because some of them are whoppers. You might have led a great life, but still made some terrible, horrible mistakes. And, you regretted greatly upon leaving that lifetime. Just because you end up in a history book, or because you won some award or maybe made some great contribution to humanity, does not mean that you walked on water and were the greatest of all people. You did other things. And if you were the greatest of all the people, you wouldn't be coming back. So let me get to that. I know a lot of people say, oh, this is my last life. You ask them, how do they know that? Oh, I went to somebody and they told me I'm in my last lifetime. Or I did meditation on it and it came to me. A voice told me it's my last lifetime. Or I want it to be. I would really enjoy it if this is my last lifetime. All of those are just nonsense, by the way. There's one true way to know it's your last lifetime. It's your last lifetime when you spend virtually every moment in this lifetime in service to others at the highest levels of service that not only you can do, but virtually anybody can do that's a human being. You got that going on, I'll buy it your last lifetime. And if you can prove it, because I got about 20 or 30 questions I can ask that would prove it or not, or disprove it. I'm not going to do it here right now, but it's not that hard. You can prove it, all the more power to you. Great. Because you're not going to be a human being in your next lifetime. How many people are like that? Almost zero. Yeah. We only got 6.5 billion or whatever it is, 7 billion people in the world. Hey, there's almost nobody just like that. Yeah. So how come everybody thinks that way? Well, because we would prefer not having to think that we got to come back to the physical world. All because we didn't live our life in some of the most virtuous ways that we should have and could have. And we don't want to think about all the changes we need to make in this life now and in the future. It'd just be better to say, well, this is my last life. I'm gone. I'm out of here. I'm going to be one of those master guys that only does things as they choose, when they choose. Yeah, they can create a physical body for themselves and get rid of it at the same time whenever they want. It's cool. You know? They don't ever get sick. They just, you know, they're omnipotent in sorts, certainly omniscient, and they're no longer human beings. At least not in the definitive sense of having a separated personality, which is what makes human beings human. So interestingly enough, people want that. They say, yeah, that's cool. I want to be one of the masters. You know, I want to do great things. They're doing everything. But what they really want is to be away from fears, live a life away from struggle, not have karma come to them, not have to face death. Even if they really, really understand they're going to go on and live in the afterworld, most people don't want to go through the dying process. And if they are willing to accept it, they would rather it be fast and slow and not some kind of drawn-out misery. Okay, fine. And in their sleep, they usually say. Well, fine. But these beings that I'm talking about, they don't really die. If you're in your last lifetime, you're going to be on one of these beings, you're not going to die. You're going to live. But you're going to live in a much greater realm under freer circumstances. You become a living soul. Okay, well, that's cool. You just don't live as souls live in the higher mental world anymore. You live in a place called the intuitional or Buddhic world. But you're still alive. You're a being. And you can create bodies for yourself as you need to in the three lower worlds. You have a Buddhic body, which you can use all the time anyway. It's kind of a different way of looking at it. And again, death is no longer part of the equation. It doesn't mean anything. The person just leaves the physical body and says, well, I'm not going to be using that anymore because I can create a new one. It's going to work a lot better for me in a lot less time. And trying to keep this old thing going is just going to be a miserable experience and a lot of wasted time and energy. I could be serving rather than doing that sort of stuff. So bye-bye body. What do? They lay down. They go to sleep. It looks like. And that's it. They're gone. They can instantly reappear in a body made of light that they created at the moment. Or they can go to any one of the three lower dimensions and the subworlds within those and do all kinds of service with other people, including and also lower kingdoms. They are masters, and they can do what they want. Karma stops for them on a personal level, and they're no longer reincarnated. Why not? Because they are a living soul that can create the body and senses they need as they need it in any dimension of time and space from the Buddhic down. Unlike the soul that is trapped, that is a human soul, they have become a liberated soul. They liberated themselves because we create our own lives. So they created it for themselves. They did so not by sitting around and saying, gee, I want to be a minister. They did it by serving others. They did it by co-creating with their creator, God, and being so aware of its presence inside of them and they inside it that their sense of who they are and what reality is became something totally different than what a human experiences. Human beings are mostly an illusion. They have no illusion in the three lower worlds. That's a totally different kind of being. It doesn't live the way we live. They're omniscient. So they know anything and everything they need to know to be of service to others. They don't know it necessarily in the way that human beings think. Knowledge isn't something they're just concerned about themselves about, because they can't use knowledge in that way. They use it to serve others. They live their life as a part of God. Hey, that's a cool way to be living, if you ask me. I'll go for that. You know? All right. So what else? What else does it mean, then, if they're free of death and free of reincarnation? What is their life about? It's about becoming more and more a part of God and exercising abilities that we would consider godlike, but they would just consider them ordinary for themselves. It's a different place. Are we headed there? Yes. About how many incarnations does a human being go through before they get there? Well, there's a magic number, but I don't think it's anywhere close to being very accurate for most people. And that's 777. I think somebody thought 3 sevens would be a very cute number. Reality suggests that it's somewhere between 700 and 800 or more lifetimes. That's a lot of lifetimes, especially when there could be an average of about 100 years between the lifetimes in the physical world, or more. It could be 130, 120. Depends on the level of development on a planet, a specific time, and how close people are in terms of their soul relationship. Because for some reasons, people will go longer and sometimes shorter between lifetimes. 150 years would be considered a fairly long time. So if you think that today people might live for 80 and you had 150, there could be 230 years for the physical lifetime to the next physical lifetime, but then you got to add in the astral time, which could be another 40 years, and mental time. By the time you're done, it's in the 300-year range for a lot of people. If you're here doing a lot of spiritual service, it might be 30 years. You don't need to have afterlife experiences to reincarnate when you've already done your homework while you're physically and astrally and lower mentally alive. And while you could be of great service in those realms, the most important thing is you get back to the physical realm as soon as possible, so you may reincarnate faster. But it's also based upon other factors, other people you may need to reincarnate with, karmic relationships with them. How fast they're growing. They may hold you back, but you gladly allow that to happen because you're here to co-serve with them as well. And what God needs at that time. I know it's hard to understand that someone can really gain a sense of what God needs. We have two senses that help us to do that. And as we develop these parts of ourselves, those senses are the things that become the most acute. And then we do know what is needed by the God in everyone. Because God isn't a being standing around we're looking at. God is everywhere and it's all people. It's part of all of life. And then we get a sense of what is needed of us to help that part of God to grow at that time. Exercising that is really another major thing that changes the issues and the connections we have with reincarnation. We have a whole set of different reasons for understanding and wanting to reincarnate than we had in an earlier lifetime or that others around us may have. Our whole life may have different motives. This is not easy for us to understand because we're so caught up in the things that are around us in our personal lives. But when you can get out of them, you have a different kind of life. And reincarnation means a totally different thing to these kinds of people. They look at it just as a creative venture on their part because they see themselves more as the creator of their next life rather than as the, we'll say, one being created. That's a different perspective. Actually, it's much more accurate, too, to see yourself as the creator of your next life. I know very few people feel that way while they're physically alive. If you're downtrodden, if you feel as though your life is not going the way you want it to be going, if you think others are causing this problem for you or not, you need to change your perspective on reincarnation to change the way you perceive everything on and around you. Again, reincarnation is not the most important element. The real importance is to make yourself in touch with your soul. But your soul's attention is on reincarnation. So in an odd way, it is if you're becoming a soul or you are a soul some of the time, reincarnation is a big deal. But for most people, it's a meaningless deal because they don't know how or don't want to know how to use it for their benefit and the benefit of others. Very interesting stuff. Okay, so masters and people who are about to become masters have a different sense of moving on through the different subworlds and worlds and coming back. They have a totally different sense. Who else has a different sense? Well, someone who's toward the last 5 or 10 of their lifetimes, and especially if they're the last 2 or 3 of their lifetimes, they have a different perspective as well. Let's take the 5 or 10 folks. Those are people who have usually gone past the middle of the second initiation, if you understand what that means. And they're living their life in a spiritually disciplined way. Now, in these circumstances, if you're looking at 10 more lifetimes, it sounds like a huge number. But in the perspective of over 800 or around 800, it's a drop in the bucket. And it isn't a lot of time, possibly, to change yourself from being human to superhuman. So the reality starts to set in that who you are today is likely not going to be who you are even tomorrow, much less 5 years from now or 10 years from now. Your perspective on self-development becomes higher self-development, and you're looking at yourself as being someone very different. Not just in this lifetime, but also in this lifetime in the astral and lower mental worlds and in your next reincarnation. You see yourself as going to be continually growing, and you're no longer wed to or even concerned about your personality because that's going to change as it becomes more and more your soul, and as you become more and more your higher self. You're not really all that worried about that. A lot of people are fearful of that issue. And it adds to their fear of death. But those people in that perspective are starting to gain a new sense of self. And they're looking at their lifetime as a resource for change and becoming more a part of God than they are about sticking it out and living through certain consequences and problems. Their karma becomes opportunities. Those opportunities, as they take them more and more and grow with them and become more creative with them, are exciting challenges and improvements in all that they come in contact with and serve, including themselves as well. They have a very different perspective. What about someone who's down to 2 or 3 lifetimes? Well, those are people who are at the end of the 3rd initiation or in the 4th. They're considered to be arhats. What is that? What does that mean? Well, it's someone who has a grasp to such a great extent on what it means to be a part of their creator that their perspective is almost continually about creation and co-creation, but only to help the creator, not even to do what would be considered necessarily be a good civic citizen or maybe serve as a politician or things like that. They're not necessarily in that vein at all. They are almost masters. They can do some super things, and the super things they can do most of the time nobody else knows about, or maybe a few of their students do, but not the rest of the world. What kinds of things can they do? Well, they're omniscient. They usually develop high levels of omniscience. Omniscience means all-knowing. They have the ability to be conscious of things that most people don't see or understand. They have usually great tolerance, but sometimes they also have intolerance, because oftentimes the last things to go in these folks are the worst things, not the best things. Why are the worst things left to go in those that are most advanced? Because they're the hardest things to get over. And if they've already gone through 800 lifetimes or 777, whatever it's going to be, and they haven't yet done it, they must be pretty awful things, and so they have to deal with those awful things. And they usually have to deal with almost everything on a completely conscious level, because although they're becoming a higher self, their real higher self, the solar angel, is not connected to them. Not connected to them. Not any longer helping them to survive the definite sense of loneliness that human beings would have if they didn't have a conscience, they didn't have the other elements of this being. But they actually don't have that. Why? Because masters don't have that. Masters have to become an equal with the solar angel, not taking from the solar angel. And to learn that, this great being, which is a sort of an alter ego to the soul, it is considered a soul with a big capital S, but it's not a soul like the individual human soul. It's a real being separate from the human soul. That being eventually lets go. It says, okay, this lifetime you're on your own. Whoa, that is a lot different. It allows you to be a lot more creative, but it means that you're going to suffer the consequences of all the mistakes you make when you're doing so much creation. And oftentimes, it's a belaboring and serious problem. But that's part of leaving the human kingdom. And if you don't want to incarnate anymore, this is what you got to go through. And you can say, well, that doesn't sound so bad. I mean, my life isn't all that great anyway. How do I sign up for this Arhat thing? Arhats suffer greater than any other human being ever can. Or will. They have to suffer first for all their mistakes. Then they have to suffer for all the mistakes of all those that they serve to help, which is usually people they call students. And then they have to suffer for all the people that they come into casual contact or have anything to do with. And eventually, Arhats have to suffer for the countless others they have never met and never will. Now you could say, well, wait a second. That sounds like something like, that's like Jesus Christ or something. That's like really, that's like way out there. What are you talking about? That can't be true, because how could anybody get through that to get to the next kingdom? I mean, how does anybody stop this reincarnation thing if that's what you got to do to stop it? Well, it sounds terrible. It is true. And in the process, while they're doing all that suffering, they have to gain the greatest compassion for all of humanity of any human ever can have. The highest level of compassion while they're suffering for people they don't even know about and who may be trying to destroy them, kill them, whatever. This is who they suffer for sometimes. Unbelievable. So you thought you had it hard now. Okay. Sign up to be an Arhat. See what happens. God. Yeah. Okay, so you got some godlike qualities, yeah. But you're suffering like crazy. Now, little secret. Maybe not such a little one. Yeah. Who was Jesus? Jesus of Nazareth, who we call Jesus Christ. Jesus was an Arhat of his day. Now, does that mean that he's the Son of God? Well, go back and listen to what Jesus preached. He preached that we shall all do the things he has done someday, and some will become greater than he has. As a matter of fact, if the standards keep going up for all of these conditions we're talking about, including the suffering as well, eventually everybody will be greater than Jesus was in his day. And he said so. But people don't want to believe that because certain religions have changed that meaning to believe that he was somehow God, not God-like, but God, and manifesting as a part of God, as the Son of God, and it got very confusing. Because he referred to his master as Father, and he referred to God in a non-religious way. That's a problem in terms of interpreting what he really said. But if you want to believe that he was God, that's okay. But you also can think about him, maybe, if you want, as an arhat, who had to go through all the things that you may be familiar with. Does every arhat die on the cross? Yes, but not necessarily physically. The physical death is a choice, to some extent, that arhats take. Sometimes, most of the time, they choose a different kind of death, but they all have to be on what is called the cross, to suffer the consequences of humanity in order to free themselves from reincarnation. So when people say, well, gee, how do I get off the wheel of reincarnation? Oh, well, you just got to suffer like Jesus Christ did. Okay, maybe I don't want to get off the wheel of reincarnation this life. Can I take a pass on it? Maybe give me a rain check for like 100 lifetimes or something? Sure. You can wait around as long as you might want to. Better to prepare, though, and make each life better. And when you get to these levels that are so difficult to go through, you will do so voluntarily, without question or concern, but maybe not without some ouches and some decreeing of, why have I been forsaken? But still, you carry through. Still, you go ahead and do it. Not to get off the wheel of reincarnation like some people think, but to get on a different kind of wheel. A wheel of your own creation instead of reincarnation, where you're no longer plagued by your own past, but serve the past of all others. The whole world becomes that of your salvation-making and service for others. You're no longer saving yourself. You're saving everybody else. And it's a great life, minus all the suffering and the issues involved with it. But it's a great life. So we shouldn't look at it as like, oh, it's terribly toxic and a terrible kind of thing, and I don't want to do that. But we shouldn't also look at it as being the way you get off the wheel of reincarnation. It just happens to be what happens, but the person doesn't do it for that reason. They do it because they want to be of such service to others that they're willing to sacrifice whatever. It doesn't matter to them. And the ending of reincarnation is just a consequence that doesn't make any difference to them. They don't care about it. Because if they do, they can't do it. That's why reincarnation is no big deal. That's why, as I said at the beginning of the show, why by the end you will see that it's not really that big of a deal. What is the big deal is what is the opposite of what reincarnation is. It's the freedom to be self-created completely without coming back with all kinds of pieces of prior existences and karma to deal with on a personal level. Oh, you may be dealing with karma, but it'll be worldwide, maybe solar system-wide kind of karma, beyond our imagination. It may be so great that it's incomprehensible to humans at this point in time. Maybe it's the karma of a planet that's releasing energies that come from human beings and produce catastrophic effects on human beings. but we can't see it. It's too removed from our senses and our consciousness. But not to those who are living for all and suffering for all, to save all, and to bring about some things that are, again, so intangible and so far from the understanding of most people that it doesn't mean anything to them. But it has great, great meaning. Great, great meaning because of its super creative levels and super levels of being that are far and away beyond that whole wheel of reincarnation. Makes that thing sound silly and petty. But within that pettiness, many of us are still going through it. So we do have to be concerned and aware that we can make changes. And I hope that I've made the change in this show for all of our listeners that gets them to understand what this amazing subject is about, even if it's not as important as they maybe thought it would be. And it doesn't matter what your past life is or was. What matters is what your future is going to be. And we can all and will all be making that together. So I hope that has made some sense to you. For those of you who have lost dear ones in the last and latest catastrophe, remember this. We should all live our lives as though a tsunami, an earthquake of 9-0 or whatever is about to happen. Because we just don't know. And it's better that we live our lives as though we don't have infinite time than to squander our lives as though we do. Probably an even better way to look at it is to live your life closer to the great ones who live their life as creative beings with the most amount of joy and bliss, but also the most amount of suffering in terms. Because they know that it really doesn't matter when they die. It matters how they have lived and chosen their life to be. Now, and their afterlife, and the afterlife after that afterlife, and their next reincarnation, assuming they're going to have one. Which almost everybody, regardless of what they say and who in the metaphysical world they go to hear or see saying otherwise, virtually everybody is going to have another reincarnation. Remember that, and you won't go wrong, I hope, from that concept. All right. Well, listen, I hope this show has made some difference with all of you folks out there. And I hope all these shows are doing that, actually. Sometimes I evaluate whether I think I'm making some difference about what I'm saying here and now. And if not, you do have the opportunity, by the way, to email me, niles@whylifeis.com, also thoughts@whylifeis.com. It kind of used to mean something different, but you can use either one. We are running out of time. You can get a hold of us that way. And you can also go to the agelesswisdom.com website and find out other ways of contacting us. But we are out of time for right now. So listen, until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is. Thank you.
Hey, what's up, peoples? This is the Worderer, and you can peep my flow